Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Filing Date Ends with a Bang. This article is entitled, Morales Filing Highlights Final City Election Entries, by Stuart Doreen. Former Midland Mayor Jerry Morales will run for his old seat. Morales filed on the last day a candidate could file for the November 8th ballot. His entry into the race brings the list of candidates to three: Morales, Councilwoman Lori Blong, and Robert Allen Dixon. I'm thankful and grateful for the support and the encouragement to put my name in this race, Morales told the Reporter Telegram on Monday. They would like to see some leadership, communication, and transparency. Those were things that I focused on under my leadership. Morales was mayor for two terms, the last ending in 2019. Morales's businesses include Gerardo's Casita and Mulberry Cafe. Morales lost in 2019 to current mayor Patrick Payton, who said recently he would not seek another term. The city ballot is locked with three candidates in the mayoral race, two candidates running for District 4, generally West Midland, and Jack Ladd Jr., the lone candidate to file for District 3, generally Central Midland. The Midland County Elections Office reported that the deadline to register to vote in the November 8th election is October 11th. 2 weeks of early voting will start on October 24th, and the deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail is October 28th. This article is entitled, Hodges to Run Against Trichetti for MISD Board, by Stuart Doreen. Brandon Hodges is running for Midland ISD School Board. The man who led the campaign to defeat the school bond in 2019 and is the co-creator of the MISD Homework Facebook page filed Monday to run for the District 5 seat. Hodges will face John Trichetti III, the current seat holder. Monday was the last day a person could file to be on the November 8th ballot. Elections on November 8th will include MISD Districts 3, 5, and 6, and Midland College Places 1, 2, and 3. Midland ISD also announced Monday that the race for District 3 will have two candidates on the ballot. Tim Lurley withdrew his name. Tommy Bishop and Reagan Hinojos are running for the District 3 seat. Sarah Burleson and Carrie McNeil are running for the District 6, currently held by Rick Davis. The Midland County Elections Office reported that the deadline to register to vote in the November 8th election is October 11th. 2 weeks of early voting will start on October 24th. And the deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail is October 28th. This article is entitled, Trustees to Talk About Aviation, Future of Maintenance Technology Program on Midland College's Monthly Agenda Today, by Stuart Doreen. The consideration of options for the reopening of the Aviation Maintenance Technology Program at Midland College is on the Board of Trustees' agenda today. The board will have its monthly meeting at 4 p.m. inside Cowden Rotary Community Room at the June and Frank Cowden Jr. Dining Hall. There has been an effort to bring the Aviation Maintenance Technology Program back to life in recent months. In the spring, there was a meeting at the program's home at Midland International Airport to see what support there was for keeping the program. It was there that officials from Kepler Aerospace, a tenant at the spaceport, stated the need for aviation mechanics. During subsequent public meetings and in op-ed articles in the Reporter-Telegram, Ed and Diane Anderson have stated the need to train and maintain technicians, especially if Midland Development Corporation wanted to expand on the aerospace economy it is establishing with AST and Science and Kepler Aerospace, not to mention the charter aircraft companies like Deerhorn Aviation. In a July op-ed, Ed Anderson wrote, "As of this writing, there are 22 to 24 available positions for AMTs in Midland, Odessa, and Andrews. This number is the result of a survey taken last month among 9 aviation-related companies. We have a fast-developing aviation and aerospace industry in Midland, but we have competition. One Permian Basin company recently lost AMTs to Blue Origin, located in Van Horn." Anderson told the Reporter-Telegram in an email on Monday that he is hopeful the board will vote to reopen the Aviation Maintenance Technology, Airframe and Power Plant program at Midland College. "The board has heard from the community over the past several months, and it is clear the community wants this program to be restarted," Anderson wrote. "No one has come forward to say we should keep the school closed. If the school board decides to reopen the school, the trustees and the administration will probably expect those who have come forward to support the school to be closely involved in its future success. That goal is achievable. We can make this school a prized and valuable part of Midland College and the Permian Basin." Midland College President Steve Thomas said in April that there was no saving the Aviation Maintenance Technology program at Midland College, even if someone came along with the money to help fund it. Midland College board members have talked about the program in closed session since Thomas made those comments. "We have already undergone procedures to sunset the program, which means we have notified FAA and the program accrediting agencies," Thomas said in a statement. "We also notified the advisory committee, faculty, and students over a year ago that the program was closing. Faculty are retiring, and we are not recruiting new students. We are planning other uses for the facility." This article is entitled, "Scarborough Feels Like Home for New Principal." Jimenez works to create family-centered culture at school to support both students and parents. Text and photo by Trevor Hawes, Midland ISD. Iris Jimenez was helping a teacher prepare for STAR testing at Scarborough Elementary School when she heard news that the campus would be hiring a new principal for the 2022-23 school year. She knew right away she would apply, because Scarborough already felt like home. Jimenez became very familiar with Scarborough last year when she was a director in the Office of Learning, Leading, and Innovation. "I saw a lot of need at the campus, but I also saw a lot of potential," she said. "So when the opportunity to become a principal opened up, I jumped at the chance." A 23-year veteran in education, Jimenez has many achievements. She holds a bachelor's degree from UTEP, 2 master's degrees from Sol Ross State University, and is on the verge of receiving her 3rd master's from Sol Ross. She's been a teacher, a principal, and an administrator, joining Midland ISD last year. But so much success doesn't mean the journey was easy. Jimenez was born in Mexico and emigrated with her family to El Paso when she was 6 years old. She entered 1st grade without the ability to speak English, and she carries this experience with her today at Scarborough Elementary. "When I started at Scarborough, I didn't realize just how many families spoke Spanish," Jimenez said. "I was once that young child in a new place who struggled because I didn't speak the language. And the same was true for my parents. I understand this struggle firsthand, and I work to ease this challenge for our families." Jimenez sends parent communications in English and Spanish, and when she's working with students, she speaks in both languages as well. The feedback has been very positive. Our parents, both English and Spanish speakers, say that bilingual communication has made Scarborough a more inclusive, inviting, and vibrant community, she said. That's been my goal for Scarborough, and we're already well on our way, not even a month into the new school year. Meeting parents where they're at through language isn't the only way Jimenez is supporting families. As part of her family-centered approach to school community, she is responding to families' needs revealed in a recent survey. Our Spanish-speaking parents have asked how we can help them with ESL and civics lessons. And all of our parents want to learn about how they can keep their kids safe online and how to use technology so they can better assist their children, she said. Jimenez wants to support them with all of this, and Midland ISD's new family outreach liaisons are helping make this possible. I'm so glad to have a parent liaison on campus, she said. They are our home-to-school connection, and the liaison will play a critical role in making Scarborough Elementary a place for the whole community, not just students and staff. It's this team-oriented approach to education that has Jimenez confident that students, staff, and parents together will lift Scarborough to new heights and become a school not just for students, but for everyone. Trevor Hawes is a communication specialist at Midland ISD. This article is entitled Cheek Files to Run for MC Board by Stuart Doreen. Cassandra Mohalt Cheek has filed to run for a seat on Midland College's Board of Trustees. Cheek will run in place 3 against G. Larry Lawrence, according to Midland College officials. Midland College places 1, 2, and 3 are on the November 8th ballot. Monday was the last day for a person to file for the election. Lawrence was one of 3 current board members to have previously filed. Steve Kaiser in place 1 and Linda Cowden in place 2 are the others. All of Midland College's seats are at-large positions. This article is entitled Weekend Rainfall Drenches Drought-Plagued Midland by Stuart Doreen. The wet weather this week made a significant impact on the forest fire potential in Midland County, according to Texas A&M University. The university's Texas Weather Connection shows daily results from the Keach-Byram Drought Index, which is used to determine forest fire potential. The drought index is based on a daily water balance, where a drought factor is balanced with precipitation and soil moisture, assumed to have a maximum storage capacity of 8 inches, and is expressed in hundredths of an inch of soil moisture depletion. On Sunday, following 2.43 inches in around 10 hours, the Keach-Byram Drought Index showed Midland County dropped 149 points to 491. That meant, in a matter of a week, the index went from threatening a top-level ranking between 700 and 800 and had fallen to below burn ban levels. On Monday, the reading was 493. Instead of being at a level often associated with more severe drought with increased wildfire occurrence, and where intense deep-burning fires with extreme intensity can be expected, Midland County is at a level where lower litter and duff layers contribute to fire intensity and will burn actively. Wildfire intensity begins to increase significantly. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the county will not enact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. The score Sunday is dramatically lower than the burn ban level. The current burn ban is scheduled to end in September. The National Weather Service has reported 3.16 inches of rain at Midland International Airport this month. That included 2.43 inches at Midland International Airport between 6 p.m. Saturday and 4 a.m. Sunday. The typical average for the month of August is 1.72 inches. The National Weather Service reported Monday that there is a 20% chance of showers Tuesday through Thursday and a slight chance or chance of showers Friday through Monday. This article is entitled, Horrible Texas Cotton Conditions Worsen Global Supply Outlook, by Marvin G. Perez, Bloomberg. The outlook for cotton production in Texas, the nation's largest producer, took a turn for the worse, in a fresh blow to global supplies of the fiber. Only 11% of Texas crops were rated good to excellent in the week to August 21st, down from 14% a week earlier, matching the lowest since 2011, Department of Agriculture data showed. The portion of plants in poor to very poor conditions increased to 59% from 50% a week earlier. Texas accounts for more than half of U.S. output. The worsening supply prospects for the U.S., a top shipper, is fueling a third consecutive year of global deficits for the fiber, according to the USDA. There are also crop issues from Brazil to Australia, all threatening to boost the cost outlook for clothing companies such as Levi Strauss & Company and Hanesbrands, Inc. The ratings are horrible and rival the worst of the worst, said Gerald Nieper, president of Trucot, Inc., a broker in California. This month, the Department of Agriculture cut its projection for the domestic 2022-23 harvest by 19%, to the lowest since 2009-10, helping fuel a 21% surge in cotton futures in New York so far in August. This article is entitled Police Charge Man with Intoxication Assault, by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland man was arrested Sunday after his involvement in a wreck that injured a person outside of a Midland bar, according to court documents. Sage Keeney, 21, was being held Monday at Midland County Jail for intoxication assault with a vehicle causing serious bodily injury, a third-degree felony charge. Around 10:30 p.m. Sunday, a Midland Police Department officer working off-duty at Rocking Rodeo was told by bar management that a man, later identified as Keeney, wearing a white Nike T-shirt, was trying to start a fight with other patrons and needed to leave. The off-duty officer and bar management escorted Keeney out of the bar. Once outside, the off-duty officer saw Keeney recklessly accelerate the vehicle, disregarding the group of pedestrians directly behind him, according to the arrest affidavit. Keeney crashed into a vehicle and pinned a man between two vehicles. The injured man collapsed and was not moving, according to the arrest affidavit. Keeney's bond was set at $50,000. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, August 23rd. Jeffrey D. Ford, July 26, 1964 to August 13, 2022. Jeffrey Don Ford went to be with the Lord on Saturday, August 13th in Abilene after battling a long illness. Jeffrey was born on July 26, 1964 in Midland to Jefferson Lamar Ford and Estelle Eli Ford Marshall. He is survived by one daughter, Brittany Ford, and her spouse, Oliver Gomez, and the light of his world, his grandson, Kai Gomez of Arlington. He is also survived by his stepfather, George Bill Marshall of Bronte, two sisters, Kathy Cannon and husband Jerry of Weatherford, Julie Carroll and husband Brent of Midland, one brother Michael Ford and wife Paula of Haslett, Texas, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by both his parents. To celebrate Jeffrey's time spent here with us, we will be holding a memorial service on Saturday, August 27th at 11 a.m. at Redeemer Church, 126 North Judd Street, Fort Worth. Following will be a graveside held at Beth Haven Cemetery at 3 p.m., 8646 County Road 355, Stephenville. John F. Younger, Jr. John was born on November 28, 1939 in Beaumont, Texas, the son of Charlene and John F. Younger, Sr. When he was five, the family moved to Midland. John is survived by his wife of 54 years, Chica Younger, children Galeana Elizabeth Younger, San Antonio, John Stewart Younger, Burbank, California, and Isabella Allen, Boston, Massachusetts. Daughter-in-law Coco Ayala Younger, son-in-law Chris Allen, Rachel and Jeff Woodson and their boys, Han and Bude, as well as grandchildren Gray, Eleanor, Lila, and Polly, brother Dr. Charles Younger and his wife Frances, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. A memorial service will be held for John at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in San Antonio on Thursday, August 25th at 11 a.m., followed by a reception in Gosnell Hall at the church. In lieu of flowers, John's family would welcome a contribution in his name to St. Mark's Episcopal Church, San Antonio, SNPSA, an animal rescue organization, or the charity of your choice. Margaret Lambeth. Margaret Jean Lambeth, 89, of Midland, went to be with Jesus surrounded by her loved ones on Thursday, August 4th. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, August 9th at First Baptist Church in Mundy, Texas. Interment will follow at Brushy Cemetery in Knox County. Margaret Jean was born March 11th, 1933, in Throckmorton County, Texas, to Vester and Mary Bowman. Margaret Jean is survived by her husband, Bobby Lambeth of Midland, daughter Cindy and husband Mel Riddle, Susan Griffin, all of Midland, Lisa and husband Charlie Binder of Millersview, Texas, sister Nancy Bowman of Midland, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Margaret was preceded in death by her parents, Vester and Mary Bowman, granddaughter Griffin Anderson, and son-in-law Travis Griffin. The family requested, in lieu of flowers, donations may be made in her memory to the Alzheimer's Foundation. Death notices. Arturo Gomez. Arturo Gomez, 75, of Midland, passed away August 9th. Viewing will be on Wednesday, August 24th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening, August 24th. Funeral service will be Thursday, August 25th at 10 a.m. at Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe, 1401 Garden Lane, Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Or you can visit our website at www.heavenlygatefh.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 23rd. County to use ARPA funds for new library. The Ector County Commissioner's Court is set to discuss ARPA funds for architectural services for discovery, cost analysis, design, and construction of a new library. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes on Monday said the funds will come from the $10 million the county set aside for lost revenue. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in Room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. Hayes said the ARPA fund amount set to go to architectural services for discovery, cost analysis, design, and construction of a new library is around $200,000. She said there isn't a definitive amount as the contract would have to go out for bid. The cost that we would incur is a step in the process of building a new facility in the downtown area so it can serve to beautify downtown. It can help grow the downtown area and help keep the library centered and a focal point for families to come to, Hayes said. The last time the commissioners discussed a new library was during the June 28th meeting when the court heard a lengthy presentation from Julia Prince, Director of Strategy and Operations of the Ivy Group. During that meeting, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said the next step is to settle on a location. Hamm said on Monday that a location hasn't been set in stone and that Tuesday's agenda item will help the library committee determine where the site could be and what the new library would look like. It has conveyed from the Ivy Group presentation that most current library patrons and stakeholders expressed that they want for the new library to stay downtown. As far as Tuesday's meeting, the funds will help us evaluating site selection, evaluating the square feet needed and associated construction costs, and concept drawings of what a new library could look like, Hamm said on Monday. We are doing this very methodically, but it's also kind of piecemeal because at the moment, the commissioners haven't approved a budget for a new library, much less a site for it. We want to make sure that commissioners have as much information as possible in order to make an informed decision. The Ector County Library will also ask the commissioners to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a new interlibrary loan lending reimbursement agreement for 2022 from the Texas State Library and Archives Commission. The Ector County Sheriff's Office will ask the commissioners to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an interlocal agreement between the City of Odessa and Ector County for the 2022 Brine Justice Assistance Grant Program Award. According to the Bureau of Justice Assistance website, the joint allocations for the City of Odessa and Ector County this fiscal year was a little more than $87,000. That is nearly triple what the City of Midland and Midland County received, $30,063, and the City of San Angelo and Tom Green County received $29,646. The commissioners are also scheduled to speak about three items during executive session, which include legal matters, real estate issues, or transactions and personnel matters. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the Ector County Clerk's archive plan for FY 2022-2023 and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve out-of-state travel for the 161st District Judge in October 2022. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the FY 2023 budget for Area Agency on Aging. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on the 2022-2023 budget for Emergency Communication District of Ector County and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request for two cell phones and uniforms for the newly formed Planning and Development Department and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding Ector County's participation in the revised request for a proposal for electrical power supply being issued by Public Power Pool P3. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the approval to hire a contract tracer at Step 3 beginning September 5th, 2022, due to experience. consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Poppy Court Estates, a subdivision of 11.80 acres in Section 7, Block 41, T1S, TNPRY County Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Montoya Edition, a subdivision in Ector County being 2 acres in Section 33, Block 43, T2S, TNP, RWY County Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on TTF Ranch Estates, third filing, 10 acres in Block 2, TTF Ranch Estates, located in Section 26, Block 44, T2S, TNPRR County Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Iron Estates, a subdivision of 19.98 acres, being a replat of a portion of Block 3, TTF Ranch Estates, situated in Section 26, Block 44, T2S, TNPRR County Survey, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a proposed MHRC development to serve 4130 Comanche Road, 1 acre located in Faith Subdivision, Block 1, Lot 1, Precinct 1, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Review, consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding the following proposed consent agenda. A. Consider, discuss, and approve a line item transfer on general fund. Commissioner Precinct 3, Office Supplies, 001-023-5171 from Educational Travel, 001-023-5161 for $107. B. Consider, discuss, and approve a line item transfer to General Fund Emergency Management. Educational Travel, 001-890-5161 from Office Supplies, 001-890-5171 for $101. C. Consider, discuss, and approve a line item transfer to General Fund IT Subscriptions, 001-310-5207 from Non-Departmental Other General Expense, 001-950-5402 for $31,366. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment for 2017 Jail Expansion Fund, Special Department Equipment, 047-420-5507 from Unreserved Bank Balance, 047-3310 for $13,125. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment to Law Library Fund New Books, 003-700-5201 from Unreserved Fund Balance, 003-3310 for $5,944. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the Ector County Monthly Treasurer's Reports for June 2022 and July 2022, and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to propose an ad valorem tax rate for Ector County for 2022-2023, and if said tax rate is higher than the effective rate, to set the time and date of the required hearings. Consider and approve the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report for August 23, 2022 to review county financial statements and reports. Go Falcons! UTPB Cheer gets national bid. On the job for just a year, University of Texas Permian Basin head cheer coach Terry Lane is already rounding the squad into shape to the point where it has earned a national bid. The NCAA College Nationals will be held April 5th through 9th, 2023 in Daytona Beach, Florida. Since she's been involved in cheerleading for some years, Lane said if they set a goal, got the national bid, and started to compete and go to the national contests, it was going to be much easier to recruit. When you want to be a college athlete, you want to go to NCAA Nationals. That's the ticket. That's what they want, and I am so excited because it makes them work not only during football season, but then strive for excellence the whole entire year, Lane said. There are 26 students on the squad, 20 girls and 6 boys, ranging from 17 to 26. There were 9 in the group last year. On Monday, they were practicing in the upstairs gym at the UTPB gym. They brought me in to rebuild the program. That's one of the things that's sort of my specialty. I've done it with a couple of high schools in Midland. I came in recruited like crazy, Lane said. 16 of the 26 can make mat for the competition. We'll be having another tryout to be able to make that. All of them will go to nationals and support. But we will have alternates. Make mat means we perform on the mat, so that means they're going to be the ones that are chosen to be on the mat at Daytona, Lane said. She added that everyone will be part of it. You have injuries, we have people that their grades might slip, so really, it's just pushing them all, striving to be their best. So I'm really excited, Lane said. The beauty of getting a national bid this early is that they can work up to it the whole year. They recruited from Dallas and Austin, but discovered a wealth of talent in the Permian Basin as well. They may not have been in cheer, but have been in gymnastics, for example. She expressed thanks to UTPB for the backing they have shown for cheer and making it easy for her to recruit. She has used the NCAA competition and Falcon Free program as drawing cards, and it's working. Lane also owns Legacy Elite Athletics in Midland and lets the team practice there anytime they want. Cheerleading is a group sport. We depend on every single person, and if they don't do what they're supposed to do, then we crumble. It's very team-oriented, and so for high school or college-aged kids, they really love it. They feed off of it because it gives them some sense of stability and it keeps them accountable. I think that they just love it. They thrive with it, and so I'm just really humbled that I get this opportunity, Lane said. She added that she was nervous about moving from high school to college cheer. I think in a year they've done a lot, so I just can't wait for the future of the program, Lane said. The UTPB program had faltered due to COVID and losing its coach, she said. The athletes tried to pull it together themselves, but they needed leadership. It's hard to hold each other accountable whenever you're at that age. The age cap is so drastic at this level. We have 17 to 26-year-olds on the team. That's almost a 10-year gap. That's a lot, Lane said. She added that she doesn't think people understand. I really don't think that the world understands cheer and what it involves. It's a dangerous sport. Lots of injuries. That's what my goal is right now, is to keep everyone safe. Do things the right way. Teach them. Everybody's coming in learning different things from different people, so kind of getting everyone on the same playing fields to keep us safe and keep us in unison, Lane said. She noted that the squad will be out for every football, volleyball, basketball, and soccer game and making appearances. We've been here for a week and we've had 6 appearances already. We don't say no to the community, so it helps that when we need something from them, they're going to help us out as well. And I feel like cheerleading kind of gets overlooked, and so my job for them is to make sure that doesn't happen to them. So I'm their cheerleader, if you will, Lane said. Allery Richter, 21, and Jericho Flores, 22, are in their 3rd and 5th year, respectively, of the UTPB squad. Flores said the whole attitude and atmosphere have changed, becoming super positive and energetic. Richter said they have had a lot of ups and downs, but right now things are on the upswing, and that's the direction we're hoping it stays going. Both said the national competition is a big motivator this year. I think it gets our names out into the world. I think a lot of people weren't really appreciative of us before, but now that they know our efforts and how much we practice, how much we want it, I think it's good to get our names out there and definitely draw in more people, Richter said. Tax rate on OC board agenda. Consideration of a tax rate for 2022, a fitness court addition to James C. Crest Stadium, and the appointment of two new board members are among the items on the agenda for the Odessa College Board of Trustees meeting today. The meeting is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. in the Zant Community Room in the Salisbury Campus Center, 201 West University Boulevard. The total budget for 2023 is $75,241,575. If approved, the total tax rate would be $0.188643 per $100 valuation, a decrease of 6.5% over last year, Chief Financial Officer Brandy Ham said on an August 17th board workshop. However, the no new tax rate that used to be called the effective rate will increase 6.45%. According to a presentation at the August 17th meeting, the average home market value is $229,619. Ham said the annual decrease will be $2.12 and the monthly decrease will be 18 cents per $100 valuation. Because it's over the no new revenue rate, Ham said tax hearings had to be held. The hearings will be held at 6 p.m. September 8th and noon September 13th, both in room 128 of the Salisbury Campus Center. On the fitness court, the total cost would be $166,350, including $142,350 for fitness campaign tools, a $50 Blue Cross Blue Shield grant, $20,000 for a concrete slab, $25,000 for turkey installation, and $29,000 for a sunshade option, a presentation at the August 17th workshop showed. Also on the agenda are an educational report on the early college high schools, Odessa Collegiate Academy and OC Techs, an institutional effectiveness report, Vision 2030 Plus update, President's report from OC President Gregory Williams. The two appointed board members are Tom Bryford for Place 4 and Randy Wilson for Place 5. Quick hits, public town hall meetings. The Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning has scheduled two town hall meetings today to receive input on potential corridors that provide opportunity for better connectivity within the Permian Basin region. In Odessa, town hall will take place at 12:15 p.m. at Odessa College Campus, Salisbury Campus Center Building, 201 West University Boulevard, Joe Zant Community Room, second floor, lunch provided. In Midland, town hall will be at 6 p.m. at the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland, 1311 East Wadley Avenue, Midland. PBMPO will be presenting and discussing results of the screening and analysis process and next steps for completing the organization, interregional planning, and environmental linkage study. For more information, contact Cameron Walker at cwalker@permianbasinmpo.com or visit Permian Basin MPO or Facebook page www.facebook.com/PBMPO. The Secret Behind Why Men Cheat. Greg T. Anderson, author and men's expert, will present a free no-fluff seminar at 7 p.m. today at MCM Elegante, 5200 East University Boulevard. Anderson uncovers why men lie, cheat, and behave in certain ways. You'll discover what's inside men's DNA and red flags to look for. Visit tinyurl.com/Y9MMWHZS. Neighborhood Watch Meeting. Odessa Police Department and Medical Center Hospital have scheduled a Stop the Bleed, Save a Life Neighborhood Watch Meeting from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. today at the OPD Training Facility, Gardner Jones Room, 210 North Lincoln Avenue. For information, email Steve Lesueur at SLESUEUR@odessa-tx.gov. Free back-to-school haircuts. Amenti Beauty Academy, 3119 East University Boulevard, Suite A, is offering free haircuts for students ages 5 through 12 through August 31st. Haircuts will be done by the Academy students with a licensed professional overseeing the process. For more information, call 432-272-4444. MC conducts research on the world's coral reefs. For several years, Midland College students and faculty have participated in an interdisciplinary research project mainly funded by the Yarborough Foundation and Joanna and Joe B. Thomas. The research includes Midland College chemistry, biology, and engineering programs. In the past, teams conducted longitudinal studies off the shore of Roatan, Honduras. This summer, July 19 through July 1st, a Midland College research team composed of faculty and students conducted a comparative study at Bonaire, Netherlands. Coral reefs are the densest locations of biodiversity on the planet, explained Sarah Anderson, who served as the team's dive instructor and safety officer. All coral reefs occupy just 0.5% of the ocean seafloor, but provide a home for up to 50% of all ocean life. They can be found throughout the world in depths of 20 feet to 150 feet. Team members further stated that coral reefs face several challenges, including natural threats of oceanic tectonic shifts, underwater volcanic activities, and severe weather such as hurricanes. They also become diseased due to human activity, such as pollution and overfishing, leading to decreases in underwater species that feed on algae. This causes an increase in algae bloom on the reefs, which in turn destroys the coral. Midland College students participating in this summer's research included Michael Mangan, Justin McKinney, Jordan Ricks, and Shakila Sharapayo. They were mentored by Marlana Mertens, Microbiology, Greg Larson, Environmental Biology, Dr. Brian Flowers, Engineering, and Dr. Tom Reddy, Chemistry. Prior to the trip, MC Engineering students fabricated sensor packages that were deployed and submerged at four distinct dive sites off the coast of the Netherlands. The sensors collected temperature, pH, salinity, and dissolved oxygen measurements. Students used the data to assess various parameters, including coral populations, nutrient concentrations, pathogenic bacteria, and planktonic biomass. Some details released in 10th Street shooting. More details have emerged about a West 10th Street shooting that prompted the Odessa Police Department to put on an alert on the department's app, according to an OPD report released by the Odessa American as a result of a Texas Public Information Act request. A corporal responded with lights and sirens to the Shaved Ice restaurant Mango Tango around 5 p.m. August 11th about a shot being fired. While officers were en route, dispatchers received numerous calls about people running from the area. When officers arrived, they spoke with a 15-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl. According to the report, the boy said they were sitting inside the restaurant when four boys came inside and told him to go outside and fight. He said he only knew one of the boys and not by his full name. He further said one of the kids began swinging at him, and when he responded by slamming the boy to the ground, one of the four kids yelled out for a friend to get the gun. The boy said one of the teenagers got a gun from a Chrysler and fired three shots into the air. The boy said he was able to make it back to the front of the restaurant when one of the kids began swinging at him again. When someone attempted to intervene, they were struck an unknown number of times, the report stated. All four boys left the scene in the Chrysler. The girl provided an Instagram name of one of the suspects, according to the report. A 17-year-old Odessa High School student has been identified as one of the suspects, and three shell casings were found at the scene, the report indicated. Woman accused of injury to elderly. An Odessa woman was arrested last week on a warrant issued after her husband's grandmother accused her of assaulting her. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 66-year-old woman called police on February 11th and told them Aspen K. Ehrenberg grabbed her arms during an argument and her nails dug into both of her forearms above her wrist. Officers saw open wounds on the woman's arms and sought a warrant for injury to a child, elderly individual, or disabled individual. Ehrenberg was arrested August 17th, Wednesday, and booked into the Ector County Jail. The Eagle Bend, Minnesota resident was released the same day after posting a $5,000 surety bond. Injury to an elderly individual is a Class 3 felony, punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 10 years. Trial delay after positive COVID. A sexual assault trial of a 26-year-old Odessa man was postponed just minutes before opening statements Monday when prosecutors discovered a key witness has COVID-19. Joel John Valdez was indicted in June 2020 on two counts of sexual assault of a child. He is accused of raping a child under the age of 17 in October 2019 and having the same child perform a sex act in January 2020. Valdez remains in the Ector County Jail on a $30,000 bond. Retired Ector County District Court Judge Tyrone Lewis has rescheduled the trial for September 19th. Odessa man accused of stalking. A phone app and video surveillance helped Odessa police officers obtain enough evidence to arrest an Odessa man on a stalking charge earlier this month. According to an OPD report, a 33-year-old woman contacted police on August 8th to complain that a man she lived with for 4 months, Michael S. Cornett, 38, was repeatedly calling and messaging her from random numbers despite the fact she told him to stop. She also told officers that she'd been receiving alerts from her stolen iPhone that showed the phone was at Cornett's home at various times and outside her apartment, her children's school, and her son's basketball practice field at other times. The woman who dated Cornett 7 months provided officers with an email documentation of the phone notifications. Officers also obtained video surveillance of Cornett entering and leaving a 42nd Street store that was consistent with the woman's claims Cornett was in possession of her watch and has been following her locations by use of this device, the report stated. Cornett was booked into the Ector County Jail on August 16th on suspicion of stalking, a Class 3 felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He was released the next day after posting a $10,000 surety bond. He was also arrested Monday on suspicion of theft of property valued at $100 to $750 and released after posting a $500 surety bond. That charge is a Class B misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail.
Here's an additional story from the inside pages of the Odessa American, Tuesday, August 23rd. Man accused of sharing nude images of Odessans. A University of North Texas student was arrested last week after authorities said they found evidence he's been using Snapchat to share intimate photos of several local women without their permission, and in some cases, tried to extort them. Carlin Van, 22, of Fort Worth, was arrested August 15th on suspicion of 5 counts of publishing, threatening to publish intimate visual materials, and 3 counts of sexual coercion. Each crime is a state jail felony, punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. Odessa Police Department reports detail that investigators were told in March someone using the name of Josh Dillon was using Snapchat to post censored images of semi-nude women and offering to sell or trade the uncensored images to others. The report stated Josh Dillon was using Snapchat, Instagram, Cash App, and Dropbox to conduct business. They also learned Dillon was actually Van, and he had more than 60 videos and images of Odessa and Midland women. The report indicates investigators were able to identify several women, ages 18 to 24, whose images had been posted. In the publishing counts, Van is accused of acting with the intent to embarrass or harm the women, and he did so for his benefit. Van was released from the Ector County Jail the day of his arrest after posting surety bonds totaling $24,000.
Death notice for August 23rd. Buddy Floyd Hale. Buddy Floyd Hale, 70, died Saturday, August 20th in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.